I'm Laurie.
No, I'm Carmy.
And this is an episode. Welcome You're what?
I said, welcome back to Momsters.
Oh my I God, cannot I can't hear. I just can't hear.
But my phone's on.
I'm old.
Hello.
I'm Carmy.
I'm Laurie.
Welcome to Momsters.
Let's go.
So what...
All right,
how,
so here we
how many more weeks until you give birth?
Two, hopefully. Although they freaked me out at the OB-GYNs because I asked them what happens if I don't go on my due date. And they were like, oh, you know what? It's good that you brought that up because we should schedule for 41 weeks now, or you'll get stuck waiting until 42 weeks because there is a shortage on IV fluids, so they won't let you get induced prior to 40 weeks unless there's, like, a medical urgency. So, I don't know how we don't have IV fluids in this
company. Yeah.
And apparently there was a shortage on iron, too, which is...
So what's going on in the world that we don't know about that there's a...
War. But... but yeah, I'm not not excited at the thought of waiting till 41 weeks. So hopefully it just, you know, she comes out before then.
I don't think you'll have to wait that long.
That would be great. Still throwing up every day.
Woohoo!
Yay. For hyperemesis. Yay.
It's...
It only took me 9 months to learn how to say that.
I had sympathy vomit for you last week, I think it was. I vomited. I don't remember. It was bad. Maria had to leave the room. Yeah.
Gross.
It was horrible. I can't even imagine doing it every day. I mean, at least I was blessed with that. When I was pregnant, I didn't vomit every day. I was nauseous. You know, don't put me in room with like chicken or turkey. I remember sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner at Graham's when I was pregnant with Maria and being like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. Just the smell.
Mm. Yeah, I couldn't eat poultry when I was pregnant with Lincoln, but this pregnancy, she's good with poultry.
With Robbie, I ate steak the whole time.
Well, I mean, as much as she's good with anything, because I throw everything. I ate a lot of red meat with Lincoln, too. I wonder if that's like an iron thing.
You know what? I wonder if that's why I feel so horrible now, is because I haven't been... eating red meat. And I know with our, like, everybody says you shouldn't eat red meat, it's not healthy for you. I get that, but when you have our genetic disorder, it's not a bad thing to have a steak every now and then.
I think that, you know, as long as you're using red meat in moderation, that you can eat it and it has unique nutrients.
Well, right, and if it's a better cut of meat, I think they would say a better cut of meat.
Mm-hmm. If you're not eating ground beef every single day, then you're probably getting benefits from the amount of red meat that you're bringing into your diet. Although, there's like a whole, if you really get into the weeds on any of these nutrition issues, they become very complex, but apparently, if your beef is grass-fed and grass-finished, that's a thing, it's got to be 100% of the way, then that's healthier because it has more, let me try to be a nutritionist here, omega-3s, which are good for you, I guess. So you are getting a lot more nutrition out of beef that's grass-finished, grass-fed, than just your standard beef. So just like everything in nutrition, you have to do a lot of homework to figure out what's actually good.
I had a friend who came to my house yesterday, and I was helping her with starting her business. So she does nutrition and physical training, and she's just like a genius at it. And you just said like, oh, you have to do a lot of research. And I was telling her, I'm like, I rather pay you Like, I'd rather pay somebody who's, like, passionate about it and just, you know, really wants what's best for you and works with your body type and like, she hits, you know, checks all the boxes on that. And I'd rather pay you to do the research on it and go, here you go, this is what you should be eating, than...
Well, it takes so much time and effort to research every single level of nutrition from, you know, artificial additives and colors to what sort of soil is this growing in and is it safe for consumption? And then you've got to compare all the US products with the UK products because the UK has real regulations and we don't. And it gets really heavy. Like, I don't think moms really can keep up with all of it. It's not sustainable to be able to go through, like, every single item in your pantry and eliminate everything that's processed or has chemicals in it. I mean, there's chemicals.
Well, what do you do then when your kids go to a party or when they go to someone else's house and, you know, when you say don't eat anything, you know?
They're never going to not eat everything. It's for me, it's about moderation. We do, you know, a little bit of red dye. I wouldn't say we do a lot of it at all. but I'm, you know, there's never going to come a point where I tell Lincoln, like, you can't have a Kit Kat. So I just...
Yeah, we know. We've been there.
That kind of a mom. I'm not that far into the nutrition mom space, but I like to be cognizant, at least, of it. Especially, like, in spaces that you don't even think of it. Like, there's a lot of these pop rice ball things or crunchy stuff that they give to babies. And basically anything that's puffed up like that, that's made from rice, will have naturally a higher arsenic level than probably anyone's comfortable with. Zero would be ideal for baby food, but I mean, there's a non-negligible amount of arsenic in everything that's got rice in it, especially if it's rice from Texas. Somehow Pakistani rice is much healthier for you than
Texas. All right, I'll have to remember rice. That.
But like, who even, I don't think anybody would ever even make that connection that, like, okay, let me not shove all these puff things down my kid's throat because it's a whole lot of arsenic in their diet.
What?
And you have to do that with everything. You have to do that with meat. You have to do that with snacks. You have to do that with vegetables, which are constantly getting recalled now, and that's also...
Yeah, I just hung up with your grandmother, and she's telling me not to eat carrots. Apparently carrots are on the...
Can't eat carrots now! I still don't know what we're supposed to do about lunch.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't hear about that either. I don't remember. I just don't remember. That means you have to either, like, watch the news or read it, and, you know...
It's constant homework to be a nutrition mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work. So I do, you know, as much as I can and try to be realistic about the fact that there's going to be stuff that he's consuming that's not great for him. But it's, I mean, we're talking in scientific terms, like parts per million, parts per billion of arsenic. So, it's highly diluted, but I think you hear lead, arsenic, like, and you naturally react to that and think, how is that possible that that's in my baby food?
And then they drop something on the floor in the grocery store and pick it up and put it in their mouth immediately, and then what are you supposed to do, right? The binky pacifier goes flying. You know, the first child you're like running with the antiseptic trying to get the whole thing clean. The second child, it's just like a wipe off and back in the mouth. So there's always going to be something.
Oh, I know. I was just telling Patrick, I don't know if we're going to disinfect our bottles this go around, because it seems unnecessary.
With Robbie, I was really careful. I did, because he was my first. So, you know, you do everything the right way. I didn't heat anything up in the microwave. I didn't, you know, nothing went in the dishwasher. Everything had to be boiled or whatever. And not with Maria.
Coco, get down. Oh my gosh, the dog is in so much trouble right now. Patrick,
what is she doing?
Come get Coco. She's eating. No, man. It's not okay.
She likes Chinese food. That's great.
Lincoln likes
Chinese food. Does he really? Food, which is great.
Yes. It's impossible to get him to eat anything, which is another challenge in trying to be a nutritious mom, because I just need him to eat food and put weight on, and if he's willing
to just give him anything. Yeah.
10 donut holes. 10 donut holes are more food than
a Starburst for breakfast. Anything,
so. Or like his new thing, we got him fruit cups from Costco. They're really good. He likes peaches. He was into them for a couple days. Now he just drinks the juice and throws away the fruit part. Like, it tastes the same. Just eat the whole thing. So yeah, sometimes it's just like chicken nuggets because that's what he'll eat.
I completely lost my train of thought, which is, you know, common for a mom at any time of your life, you know, whether you're a new mom, a pregnant mom, an old mom like myself. We were talking about food and nutrition, and now I can't even remember what we were talking, what I had on my mind. As my mother would say, it must not be important. Is that you? What in the world do you have in your hands? It's this spinny flashy thing that looks like, people can't see. Listening. So describe what you have in your hands. You have a child's toy, and as it spins, it makes different colors, and it's almost like a kaleidoscope, but you could see it. Yeah.
One of those Disney light up wands that costs a ridiculous amount of money.
Food and nutrition. Vitamins. I don't ever remember giving my kids vitamins. Maybe I did.
We never had water either growing up. Every kid now has a
water
bottle.
We never had water growing up.
I had half a glass of water a day, that would be.
I don't remember us drinking soda though either. Like, we didn't drink soda.
Oh, we drank so much soda in my house. We would go through a 2 liter of Coke a night. I don't know how we ended up as healthy as we were. I think it was because we would just like only eat really bad food once a day.
I drank a lot of iced tea then. I drink a lot of iced tea now.
Well, iced tea has even more sugar drink than soda. So it's... I don't know. I can't drink unsweetened iced tea.
Well, technically you could if you brew it yourself. That's a lot of work. Anything worthwhile is a lot of work. I don't know. I'm in a mood. I am just in, I don't know why. I do know why, because I was working on softball stuff. Again, it's like a job. I signed up for it. I can't complain because I signed up for it.
Oh, I do that all the time. I volunteer for things because I'm qualified to do the things. Then I don't want to do them. And then you think you're special for like a second. They make you feel really good. Like, oh.
Yeah, because no other parent wants to do it.
The truth is there's nobody else wants volunteering.
They're like, oh, we love you. You have to do it. It's because nobody else wants to spend their whole life doing it.
You're not special. You're just gullible. Not you, but anyone that gets roped into these things.
And when I think of how many times I threatened to quit, I'm not doing this again. Not here I am. Year 3.
But like, what are you supposed to do? Because no one else will do it.
I don't know. Maybe it was something about grandma that I wanted to talk about with us growing up eating. Oh, we never had a variety of food. Like when you said about Lincoln, like, oh, he loves lo mein, right? I didn't have Chinese food until I was in college. Like, we never ate anything that wasn't either, like, an Italian food or very like a meat, a potato, and a vegetable for dinner. Like that was it.
Okay, well, is that because of your socioeconomic situation that you weren't eating out a lot at all, or because of the geographic area where everybody was super European and so there was no exposure to other types of foods because everybody that lived in the area was like straight off the boat from
yes
Sicily?
And yes, I would say that. I mean, we would, because they had what, like church bazaars. So over the summer, the churches would have these picnics as fundraisers, and they would make food there that we would not have at home, like potato pancakes and stuff like that, which was like phenomenally delicious. But no, our thing was like my father didn't like it, so we just didn't eat it. That ruled the house. Though we were grateful grandma didn't make us eat liver, so that was a good thing. Yes, I remember her making it.
Liver is apparently very healthy, for the record. No. But not for me.
No, and Angie used to eat liver too.
So what is that, like a depression holdover? I don't know. I don't think
now, I would eat tripe, right? So I loved tripe.
I can't do veal at all. Veal freaks me out. And I used to like venison, but I can't eat venison anymore because we have a family of deer in our backyard and I feel like they're my pets. So last time I tried it, I was feeling guilty about it.
We used to hang out at this one bar and the owner's father would make venison and he wouldn't sell it. Like he would make it almost like in a spaghetti sauce with peppers and oh my God, it was so delicious. So delicious. And, you know, he would cook it at the bar because of, well, it doesn't matter, they're closed now. So, but he would cook it at the bar because, you know, they had the big industrial appliances or whatever. And we tasted it. Oh my gosh, it was so, so good. But yeah, I've never had a venison steak. We have some friends who that's all they eat.
You never experience meat that fresh, though, in the modern age, because the meat that you buy when you go to the store isn't anywhere near that fresh.
So well, we used to have a butcher.
It's an interesting callback to an older time when people were less removed from the food that they're eating. And, you know, it is kind of common in Pennsylvania that there's hunters, like my dad used to hunt deer and he would bring the deer home and then we would eat the deer. So it's interesting. I think it gives you more of an appreciation for the food that you're eating when you're not 10 or 20 steps removed from the animal.
My neighbor's Lynn.
But obviously, that's not
sustainable. So Lynn's husband, Jeff, he went fishing one day and then whatever they caught when they were fishing, they brought home and we had for dinner. That I was a little freaked out about. Oh, but yeah.
At late. Probably shouldn't have been eating the food.
Well, I don't know where it was from.
They couldn't have been that bad.
He knows. He's. I would trust him. He's had a phenomenal garden, too. He's just one of those people.
Fresh fish.
Like, if there's.
I mean, I think we need more of that in the American diet, is fresh meat, fresh poultry. It's just. Like, first of all, who has time to search out a local butcher or like a local farm that will sell you pieces of a cow that's from like, you know, 2 hours away and had a good life. That's a lot of work.
Maybe it's,
and it's a lot of money.
Where you live though. Okay, so you're in Jersey, which is definitely more urban than where I'm from, and where I live in Pennsylvania, I could name three off the top of my head of places where I could go that mm-hmm. Yes. And I think it's interesting, though, that I don't go there more. Like, I probably should. But it's all convenient, too.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. That needs to be a greater emphasis. But if you just, like, going to the grocery store, picking out the 20 things that you get every week becomes a habit. And it takes a long time to break you out of doing that and for every single food group, every single meal that you have, trying to find a better, healthier solution, it's not necessarily reasonable. I mean, like, there's parents that just drive through McDonald's at the end of the day because they can't.
Yeah, well, wait until you have kids in sports.
Fair thing to do, right? That's so even getting to the grocery store, even mm-hmm. making a meal at all that's a step in the right direction. I don't know, it's tough as a mom in America because I think a lot of these health issues that you have to be aware of on your own and do homework and, you know, constantly educate yourself, you don't even have to think about them in Europe. Because the government is thinking about it for you. Just like you said, like, you want to hire someone that can tell you which foods you're supposed to eat. Well, yeah, that's what regulations are for. That's why we have an FDA, so that they can, you know, test these industrial productions of food and make sure that, you know, everything is up to snuff. Because you don't have time to do it. You don't. So that's my pitch for regulating food space.
So what I did with my children, I'm trying to think how I did this. We have organic soap. So like in our, you know, when you take a shower, like that's organic. They didn't know. It just, you don't tell them. I didn't tell them, you know, organic laundry detergent, because I think if you just don't make a big deal out of it, you know, rather than fabric softener, I use either dryer balls or put essential oils on them and put them in the dryer. Just things you could substitute. Instead of air freshener, use the diffuser with essential oils in them too. But again, you have to research all of that. So that's why you go to somebody who knows what they're doing. You know, I'm not going to, I don't know. It's just tough being a mom sometimes. I even get my hair colored by an organic salon. How about that? Yeah.
I do that. Yeah. I don't know if that makes a huge difference, but I do that.
Actually, I would go anywhere. The person who does my hair, I would go like anywhere she went. So if she decided she was going to move and go to a salon that wasn't organic, I'd be like, sure, you know, because she's a goddess and that's, I would follow her anywhere. So, yeah.
It's also, you know, everything in context. So there's, you know, a little bit of hazardous chemicals in pretty much everything that you're going to touch throughout your day, whether water, soil, vegetables, pots and pans, plastic, anything that you touch, even if it's organic and, you know, passes all the highest tests, there is some threshold of bad chemicals still in that. And so you instead of getting overwhelmed by that, you kind of have to pick and choose where you're going to fight your battles, because you can't physically remove these chemicals from every facet of your life. So I think that's what you have to do as a mom, is you choose these areas, laundry or, you know, pots and pans, and you try to limit your exposure in those areas, knowing that, you know, overall you're going to get a little bit of exposure in the end.
Well, I have always been more aware of toxic people than I have been of the other toxins in my life. Like, I have always been super aware with my children of not having them interact with people who were toxic rather than like other things, because what happens, you know, there's mentally, spiritually, and physically, and all of those things make a huge difference in who you are and how you become and what you know, being your authentic self.
Stress.
So I had no problem or have no problem separating my children from people who were toxic.
Yeah, I mean, I think stress is a big part of nutrition that people take for granted and leave out of their nutrition plans. And I mean, you could be eating super healthy.
Mind
but if
isn't.
you're so stressed, you're still
yep.
gonna get sick. So you have to find a balance and some way to keep those toxins out of your mind. And also, it's in addition to stress toxins and food toxins, you have to worry about environmental toxins. Because, you know, like, I mean, you could take out every artificial preservative, every artificial ingredient in everything that touches your mouth, if that's even possible. But if you're going to work in the city
right.
4 days a week, you're getting exposure to toxic pollutants at a much higher rate than an American that isn't even paying attention to whether or not they're putting red dye in their body. So it's, you really have to assess your whole life and everything that you're exposed to. And that's overwhelming and a lot of work for moms. But, you know, I mean, that's our job. We're like defense for our kids. How can I limit your exposure to toxic people? How can I make sure that you're getting the best possible nutrition and the best possible clean air and water within the context of the society that we live in, where there isn't always clean air and clean water?
When my Aunt Angie had cancer, right? So when Aunt Angie used to come to our house and she used to visit, she used to have like these test strips for water, and she used to use it like in every, I don't know why. She would like test everybody's water or test the water she would drink before she drink it. And she tested our water, and like for whatever, it was filtered through our refrigerator. She's like, this is the best water ever. So, you know.
You, I mean, usually filtering water at the source where you get it will eliminate a lot of the bad stuff. We drink tap water. I don't, as long as you're filtering it, I don't see any problem with it. For me, there's no difference in the amount of toxins in bottled water versus municipal water systems. Although I will warn you that they're basically all contaminated with PFAS, but that's a whole different issue that we've introduced a chemical into our water
system. Well, do you find
as
an environmental attorney and now as a mom, that you're even more aware of the toxicities? Like
yes, but it also becomes overwhelming to the point that it's like mind numbing. It's just like noise. So, you know, I see these moms that spend a lot of time on nutrition, and at the end of the day, I'm like, I mean, fine, but you're still getting poisoned from your water. You're still getting poisoned from your soil. There's no way you can control all of it. And at the end of the day, you're getting exposure to these chemicals in really, really small concentration. Mm-hmm. So it may have a really small effect. We usually don't know. There's not usually a whole lot of science backing this up. What we see is, like, you know, animal studies and secondary evidence for the most part. But being aware of it just makes me more frustrated.
I'm like that with people. I'm like that with energy. I rather my kids, like, that was one thing I was always like super careful with them, was the energetic part, which I guess is like the mental part, the spiritual part, of who they were comfortable with, who they weren't comfortable with, who you knew was like, you know, a spiritual vampire would suck the life out of them. You know, and kids are super intuitive.
But it has a real physical effect. I mean, like, that will have a real effect in terms of inflammation, in terms of like your gastrointestinals and ability to digest food and just keeping your systems working in general. It's incredibly important to keep the emotional door open with your kids, because that's, at least in my eyes, a huge part of
it. My daughter's friends now, they'll ask me to cleanse, like, give them a spiritual cleansing, like, just to, you know, wipe off all the bad stuff. All the bad energy. So, and I do that with kids too.
And like, even if that's just meditative in nature and you take it at face value, like that's still healthy, teaching a kid to spend 30 seconds clearing out their mind. That's awesome. Most adults don't have that level of
emotional regulation. Well, and a lot of the things that we pick up emotionally, mentally, most of them aren't even ours. It's what's coming off of another person. It's their mood. It's their reaction to something. It's how they're responding to something. And then we have to either counteract that or, you know, and how that affects us. And a lot of times I say, all right, I'll ask myself, like, is it mine? Like, is this energy mine? And if it's not mine, if I feel toxic, then I know I could either, you know, send it back to source or have Mother Earth. That sounds like really frou-frou-y, but have like Mother Earth take care of it. You know what I mean? Like, just like clear yourself of it. Just ground yourself from it.
I think that's also true of like generational habits, that sometimes you just find yourself saying something that your mom said or your grandmother said, and you have to like catch yourself and really pay attention and pull yourself back a little bit and be like, okay, I'm going to be more emotionally restrained in this moment.
Yeah. Sometimes I sound like my mother.
Sometimes I sound like my mother.
Not all the time, though. I would say that. Not all the time.
No, I think overall we've sort of carved
paths. Yes, we did. Yeah. Very proud of that. Mm-hmm. Breaking away from what you were taught. Because I look, as a parent, you could either be your parent or you could learn. Because like, this doesn't come with a guide, being a mom. It doesn't come with an instruction book. You know, look on page 344 and see what you're supposed to do in this situation. That does not happen. So using your intuition, you're either going to use your intuition and move forward in the process of either teaching your child or handling a situation, or you're going to do it out of habit or how you were taught. And that's not always the correct way. That's not always the right way. So by breaking that generational cycle of whatever it is, I think it'd be very healing for your family, for yourself and your family.
Yeah, I think you're the first line of defense in protecting your kids against generational toxicity, if you will. And yeah, there is that, like, it's sort of like a default mechanism that we just fall into whatever pattern maybe we were raised in if we're not paying enough attention to it. And I think the solution there is, like, you really have to tune in and take cues from your kid. And you need to trust your kid enough and respect your kid enough, and sort of, you know, get off of your own high horse a little bit and say, all right, my kid's not reacting. They're not responding positively to the way that I'm parenting right now. I need to change course. Because it's not that you have a bad kid. You don't have a bad 3-year-old. There are no bad 3-year-olds. You just need to adjust. And they may still be annoying and not do what you want. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that you need to be more cognizant of their reaction to your parenting than, you know, how your parents would feel about it.
Yeah, I think I let a lot more slide than my parents did. Oh, of course you do. Yeah, a little lot more slide.
But I think we're just focused on, we have different priorities.
Oh, like, our worlds are so different though too. Like, in my again, like, because your mother and I were the same, you know, like we are the same generation. We had the same parents where, you know, you're living, you know, your mother is the equal to me. So you're dealing with everything, you know, that she handed you. And I think also like generational has a lot to do with it too. Like, it was so different when I was growing up. You know, your parents didn't have to, like my children, if they wanted to do something, if they wanted to be in softball or Boy Scouts or go for guitar lessons or, you know, play soccer or whatever, I couldn't just tell them, all right, take your bike and ride up the street and go to wherever. Like, in our community, that just doesn't happen. You have to get in your car and drive your child there. You know, and there's, like, what about play dates? Like, we never had play dates. You just went to the neighbor's house, knocked on the door.
Just look at, like, where were you going as a family to get, you know, morals and values and talk through emotions? That was happening, like, in church where people were lecturing you. Whereas I think, you know, our generation and maybe starting with your generation, we had parents that were engaging more directly, communicating with their kids, talking through emotions, talking through morals and values, in a more constructive way that would teach them better than, you know, having someone standing at a lectern or an altar every weekend. So I think it gives, hopefully, the next generation more space to express themselves, because it's not just a one-way conversation. This is what you should do. This is what's right. It's, you know, let's all talk about what it means to be moral in this situation.
I do have to tell you, from a Generation X perspective, as a mom, I probably have learned more from my children being
100%.
I don't want to use the word tolerant. Like, they've just educated me more on social issues. And, you know, because my generation, we just threw money at things. Like, that is how we, you know, and that's just how we are, you know. Oh, rather than go out into a march, like, here, I'll just give you money for it. Like, you go march. We're not going to do that, you know, that we're the kind of people who are just like, you know, suck it up and move on. And I think I've learned so much from them and from their peers and things that they've showed me, yeah, you know, on, so like, TikTok and YouTube and all of that.
There's so much more acceptance and just appreciation for diversity in the next generation. I don't know if it was a defense mechanism because, you know, two generations ago, our family was fighting back against these cultural stereotypes. And so maybe it's that we, not our generation, but the generations before us, were trying to protect themselves by showing how assimilated they were and, you know, we're different than these other new people. But I like the shift. I love that. And maybe it's because we all moved out of our hometowns, a lot of us did, and we got exposure. I mean, I know that living in Queens is the most culturally diverse county in the world. That changed my life, because you don't realize there's a lot of fear-mongering. And so when you grow up in that type of fear-mongering, you're scared of people that are different. And then you get dropped into a community that's got so many different cultures, and you realize really quickly, they're just like me. They're just like me. There's no difference. They're working. They're trying to get by. They're, you know, doing their best. Don't have all the answers, but generally,
and those moms are the same as us. Yeah. They want the same thing for their children.
And so I don't know if maybe there is more exposure geographically in modern day, and that's, you know, adding to people's appreciation of diversity. But I totally recognize that the younger generations are just more sensitive and more respectful of other people's differences, even if they don't, like, even if you're not 100% on board or believe in it. Like, if somebody tells you their pronouns, if you're Gen Z, you're not going to be like, F that, I'm not going to use your pronoun, I'm going to use whatever. You're just not going to be a dick about it. That's how it is. Like, there's no reason to be a jerk to people. And for whatever reason, like, Gen X can't wrap their head around that. And Gen Z is like, all right, well, if that's what you want me to call you, then that's what I'll call you, even if I don't get it.
Well, yeah, I feel like I fit into, but I'm different. I'm just, you can't go by me. But I try my best to understand that and to respect a person for that. And really, that comes down to my children, too. But I think, you know, it does. And I have to put the whole spiritual part in it. You know, I look at souls rather than the human, the person. Yeah. I see what's on the inside. I see
and
what's through the eyes.
How hard is it to be sensitive to saying something that hurts someone? You know, like, you don't have to agree with why they're feeling hurt. You just have to feel, you know, a little bit of guilt and say, all right, well, I'm not going to make you feel like that anymore. Even if I can't connect the dots to how your mind gets there. Like, I'm just not going to be a jerk to you. I don't think it's that hard. I think there was a toxic masculine culture for Gen X and previous generations that, you know, you got to puff your chest out and you got to make fun of all the people that are different and you got to like ostracize certain groups. And I don't see that as much with Gen Z. So I'm really encouraged by that.
I have to ask my children. I think we really, really made an effort to never describe a person. When it came to my children, you know, like their classmates, you know, like by skin color or race, or, you know, we did it by, you know, as broadly as you can. And I truly believe it's the reason why they grew up without any kind of, I don't know. They're just not biased to anyone.
We need to be bringing people together, and especially, you know, kids do that naturally. So take their cues, not your parents' cues, and, you know, let them lead the way on being culturally accepting and, you know, being open to different perspectives, because they're probably going to have better insight on that. Sometimes we have to overcome our own demons, even if we're not ready yet, because our kids need us.
Amen to that.
All right. Well, thank you for coming to this very first virtual episode of Mobsters.
I love it. I love my space. I love where I am. I love that I have a desk.
This is comfy. This works. Robbie seems
He's fabulous. Our producer. All right. Carm, you take care of yourself. Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys.